Hello, and welcome to the business of podcasting. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt from Podcast Motor. Here each week, I'll sit down with one of the leaders in podcasting to find out how they're using this fantastic form of content marketing to connect with their audience, grow their brand, and ultimately build their business. If you're not already podcasting, then today is the day to start, and here we'll show you how. Okay, let's get on with the show. All right, today on the show, we have Kevin Geary from the Rebooted Body podcast. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing great. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was just remarking the other day that, you know, I think there's a couple of places where podcasting works really well for a content marketing medium. One of them is sort of business and investing and finance and entrepreneurship, which is a place where I think it's really popular. And maybe that's a little bit of a listener bias for me, but the other one is definitely health and fitness. And your show definitely fits into the latter category, huh?
Yeah, it definitely does. And, you know, since we launched, we haven't had trouble attracting ears. So that's a good thing.
That's great. So give us a little bit of background on kind of the show and how it got started and kind of where it is today in terms of numbers and place in your content medium, I guess.
Sure. So I started Rebooted Body, the project, rebootedbody.com, in the online version, I should say, in January 2013. And I listened to podcasts a lot. So it was always in my mind somewhere that maybe I should dabble in podcasting just because I thought it was fun. But I also saw the value in, okay, well, you know, what if people do like it and it's valuable to them? It's going to be a great way to attract people and eventually get them onto the website and convert them to our programs. And, you know, even if they don't do the programs, you know, we want that traffic. We want them to get the valuable information that's on our website. So it's going to be a win-win. And I think it was only March 2013, so, you know, 2 or 3 months after we launched the website, where I decided to jump in head first and put out some podcast episodes. And just, you know, went from there. We just kept to a weekly posting schedule, and we used some of our existing audience, and we used the website to promote the podcast to promote the website. So, you know, it was just a success kind of right from the beginning.
And do you do written blog posts as well as podcasts now?
Yes, we've done written blog posts. That was our main traffic strategy, was written blog posts, and it worked out really well. We have a few blog posts that rank number one for really important search terms. I don't know if we're still number one for it, but I think we're on the front page for Naked Juice because we wrote an article on that. And when we get posts that rank that high for those kind of terms, we pull in thousands of visitors you know, a day, often just on those singular posts. And that traffic makes their way, because of the way our website is set up, that traffic makes their way to the podcast. And then, of course, we have the iTunes rankings that drive traffic through the podcast back to our website. So the two mediums really help each other out. And I know there's a lot of podcasters that don't really have a website set up, or they don't really pay a lot of attention to it. And my message to them would be, you're really missing out. If you're not hitting it on both fronts, you're really missing out.
So can you give, I know it's probably almost impossible, but can you give some metrics around that? So, and I guess the best way for me would be sort of like total volume of visitors maybe that you can attribute to the podcast, and then maybe like some sort of engagement level of like how many customers are podcast listeners and some things like that maybe.
Yeah, I'm not sure I haven't pulled the numbers lately on our exact conversion from like listeners to people joining our programs. And it's hard because the way that our platform is set up, we will be interacting with somebody there's a lot of times people will just come to us and say, boom, like, I want to join your program, and they'll sign up right away and they'll tell us how they heard about us, but it's less common. So for the most part, people are having a relationship with us over the course of a month, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months. By the time they sign up, they've heard our podcast, they've been on our email list, They've read multiple blog articles. They poked around our website. They've watched our videos on YouTube. So by the time we ask them, you know, how did you hear about it? They can't even remember. Mm. So it's really hard to get, you know, exact metrics on that kind of thing. But we have, we're closing in on 500,000 lifetime downloads of the podcast. So that's since like March of 2013. And we are averaging a little bit over 20,000 downloads a month at this point right now. And our website in general gets about 100,000 unique visits a month.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, I come from a pretty business to business, or at least entrepreneur to business, I like to say, you know, type demographic for our show and our site. And so it's much smaller numbers, but maybe yeah, a little more, I don't want to say focused, but a very narrow niche. I mean, podcasters, you know, businesses around podcasting is a pretty narrow niche. I think you, fortunately for you, I think you are able to appeal to a very wide audience. You know, health and fitness and wellness is a super place to be, I think, in terms of building context. It surely is evergreen, and it speaks to a lot of people, not just people who really need it, but people who just want to improve on being overall healthy to begin with.
Right, right. We have, you know, we have really niched down within the health and fitness space. So mm-hmm. I do think that if we didn't niche down the way that we have, that we, it's quite possible we would have gotten overlooked or just kind of placed in the, oh, you're the same as kind of everybody else and there's a million of you, so why should I listen to you kind of camp. So in the pretty much from the beginning, we've been committed to real food nutrition. So we don't toe the typical line of just eat less, move more, eat whole grains, that kind of thing. So we've been very focused on real food. We've been focused on functional movement versus just go to the gym and do these exercises that everybody else is doing and personal training and that kind of thing. So we take a very unique approach to movement. Especially with regards to like not setting movement programs, doing things that you love that inspire you to do that are movement based rather than traditional exercise, things like that. And then we've put a really heavy emphasis, probably what we're known best for, is on eating psychology. So we talk a lot about the psychology behind aligning your behavior with your good intentions. You know, why do you know what to do, but you can't do it? Because that's probably the main problem that a lot of people face, especially people who come to the real food movement and the functional movement, and they already understand all that, but for some reason they just can't do it consistently because their relationship with food is off, or their relationship with their body is unhealthy, their relationship with their self is unhealthy. So we address the psychology side of things, and that's what's really set us apart.
Yeah, yeah. How did you arrive at that niching down focus? Was it an evolution over time, or did it start with your written content or the blog? And how do, I'll stop there, I guess, before I ask eight questions in one.
Yeah. So thankfully, before I got online, the niching process had already started because I was already working with people live in Atlanta before we ever launched online. So through my work with clients, I was able to really discern. I mean, I wanted everybody to start on this real food path. That's where we started. And the functional movement piece, that was already there. Because the what I had applied to my own personal life, I had already found that, okay, the conventional advice didn't work for me. And obviously, it doesn't work for a whole bunch of people, because if it did, we wouldn't have an obesity epidemic and a preventable disease epidemic, because everybody's following the same advice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what led to the real food approach, the functional movement approach. And then through working with real people in Atlanta, I found out that what people are, the obstacle people are facing most is their mind. And that's when I started realizing that, okay, you can't just tell people how to eat and how to move. If you do that for 10 people, two of them will take your advice, they'll implement it, they'll be really successful. The other eight will implement it for a couple months, and then everything will fall apart and they'll go back to their old ways and they won't change anything, and nothing in their life will be different. So when we address the psychology piece, we can take that to, we can flip it. So two people, you know, may end up dropping out. Eight people are going to be wildly successful for the rest of their life because we've addressed the underlying issues, the root causes of their challenges. And so that's what started the niching process. And we were already doing that before we took it online.
Nice, nice. I think it's great that it grows sort of organically like that so that you have a predefined vision when you do start a project like the site, the blog, and the podcast. You got your voice already established. That's one thing we talk about with our clients a lot is make sure you know damn well what your voice is, who you want to talk to, and why you want to talk to them about that. Because if you don't have that, we find that just creating content in general is really hard, and then creating good content is almost impossible if you don't have that stuff really nailed down before you start the first show.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't agree more. When even from the beginning of the podcast, and this started with the articles that I was writing for the website, I've always had a very, very specific person in mind for who I'm writing this article for and who I'm creating this podcast for. Now, with the podcast, I've deviated from that a little bit to attract some people outside of that model, but not much. I mean, we're over 120 episodes now, and I would say 90% of them are geared toward that specific person I want to talk to. And I would say the same is true for the articles. And I think that's what's really made this successful, because people understand when that specific person comes to our site or comes to our podcast, they feel that they are being talked to directly. And I think that helps a lot.
I find the health and fitness space is really interesting as just looking at it from an outsider, from a business perspective. I mean, the volume of visitors and people interested in it, like we talked about, is really just appalling extraordinary almost, I guess, compared to the business-to-business space. What challenges have you seen, aside from really finding the need to niche down, what challenges have you seen, and I guess a little bit insight in general about the fitness space or the health space online?
Yeah, so everybody would look at the industry and say, wow, that's a booming industry and it's growing and there's so many ways to be successful in it. But at the same time, you go into an industry that's that large and has that many competitors. I mean, that alone, the number of competitors, the amount of noise in that industry is a gigantic challenge. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also a secondary challenge. I think this is the bigger challenge. The bigger challenge is that the mainstream health and fitness industry is almost to the point of being like a used car lot. So nobody trusts anybody. So when I talk about somebody that's in their 30s, maybe they're 38, female, they've been dieting their whole life. So they've been listening to the health and fitness industry their whole life. They have a bunch of gadgets and gear that they never use. And they come across my site. And even though I'm saying something radically different and nothing that I write or produce, it sounds anything like what the mainstream health and fitness industry does, they automatically don't trust me because I'm in that industry. So I have to work extra hard just to gain their trust, to start a conversation, to get them thinking in a direction that's going to be beneficial to them. So it's a major barrier. And you add to the fact that I don't do anything offline anymore. I do everything online. And putting yourself online adds that extra layer of, should I trust you, right? So major trust hurdles in this industry and with the fact that I'm doing it online.
I'm only laughing because you're talking about my wife. I mean, she sees something with someone online she doesn't know already. And Yeah, instantly skeptical. I have a previous life in healthcare, and so I see the other side of it a lot, which is just ass backwards, you know, treating symptoms and the result of all this years of abuse to your body. And I think that you're right. I mean, I think that rightfully so, people out there should be skeptical of the healthcare system in general, not to get political on this, but people should be skeptical of the healthcare system because they've been approaching the end of the problem instead of the beginning forever. I mean, they're doctors, right? So that's what they should do. But as listeners in an audience, it's kind of tough to put your trust in someone that doesn't have letters after their name, and even if they do, I think, to sort of dictate the trajectory of your health. Right?
Right.
I think it's a little fair, and rightfully, I think it's a challenge that you and everyone else in the healthcare blogging and online information space should have to overcome. But I think it is tough that healthcare in general has put such an onus and such a negative bias on just information in general about, quote, how to be healthy. I think if you were starting a clean slate right now it'd be a slam dunk, and you guys would all be doing great things for yourselves and for our country and the world to make people healthier. But I think it's a little unfair that traditional healthcare is has gotten you in such a bad corner to begin with.
Yeah, and so I'll say this, that that's where the podcast has really come in, because there's two really good ways to build trust. One is through video, and then the other is through audio. But there's a problem with video. The problem with video is people's attention spans.
Yeah, 38 whereas, seconds or something.
Exactly. So we get to audio, and I, that's why I don't think that I would be, our platform wouldn't be anywhere near where it is today without the podcast, because I can get into people's ears for, our typical episodes are longer than an hour. So I can get into their ear for that amount of time. I can bring experts onto my show to back up stuff that I'm already writing about on the blog. And I can make solo shows. So I do a nice mix of material. We do interviews sometimes. I do solo presentation shows sometimes. So we get a nice mix. And it's just been a huge tool for building trust in people.
Yeah, yeah. So talk a little bit about your strategy for bringing people from the podcast onto the show, and then hopefully, you know, finding a product that y'all have that can help them out.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of experimentation with this from the beginning, and I don't really have a solid, like my thumb on a secret sauce or anything like that. What I have done in the past is driving people to, you know, free opt-in type stuff. So we'll do a show and maybe there's a supplemental little PDF or guide I can give away that goes hand in hand with that content. So I can direct people to a link to download that. Of course, now I'm going to start dabbling into just getting people to text in order to opt in. So we're trying to set that up right now. I've also done areas where just at the beginning or the end of the podcast, I will mention our program. I'll talk a little bit about what it entails. And all the content is already geared towards that. So it's basically just like saying, look, if you like what you heard and you want to, if you're serious about doing this, and our tagline is to get a body and life you love. So if you're serious about getting a body and life you love, then this is the program you need to be in. And I'll give them the link to that. And that's been probably the most successful for converting people to our actual program. Of course, people just get curious and they hear a bunch of podcast episodes, and I'll mention, you know, that we have a ton of content on our website. So they'll eventually make their way there. They'll read some articles. They'll get on their email list there, and they'll eventually come around, because our email list is set up with an autoresponder series to walk people through the foundational content, the foundational ideas that we teach, and then invites them into the program. So there's a myriad of ways that people can hit our podcast and eventually become a member of our academy.
Yeah, yeah. I guess real quick, just on that note, just kind of run through a few of the tools that you're using. So something like Lead Pages and Infusionsoft. I mean, what kind of tools are you using to help bring people along that paradigm?
Yeah, so I use Lead Pages just mainly for lead boxes. So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of their double step, their two-step opt-in, where they can just, someone can click a link, a little box pops up, and they opt in there. So we use lead boxes a lot on our site. We use Thrive Leads for pop-ups and other style opt-ins on the site. And I would say that that is the majority of where the opt-ins come from. So there's an overlay that happens when people first visit a blog article. I don't put any pop-ups on pages on our website, because I want people, typically pages have very important information. I don't want to interrupt people. But we do use overlays on our blog posts. And that's where the majority of leads come from. We are sending people to Active Campaign. That's who we use for our email list and marketing automation and so on and so forth. So those are the three main tools.
Gotcha, gotcha. And podcasting gear, just because I'm an engineer in a former life again. So what kind of tech are you using for like recording your show and editing and whatnot?
Yeah, very simple. I have a Shure SM7B into a Cloudlifter, into a Focusrite 2x2 or 4x4. I can't remember which one it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's just going right into an iMac. And I'm using Audition.
Okay, nice, nice. Audition, amazingly, we have 5 audio editors on our team, and every one of them uses Audition. It's amazing.
Yeah, because I have a Creative Cloud membership, so it's a no-brainer to just throw that on there.
Yep, yep. So I haven't used the Shure before, but we point almost every one of our new customers towards the Audio-Technica ATR2100. I think just bang for your buck, it gets you about as close to a great sound as you can get for the dollar. I mean, it's like $50. It's amazing.
Well, if people listen to my show, the first 100 episodes were recorded with that mic.
Mm-hmm.
So I've only been using the Shure for, you know, 15 or so episodes.
Nice, nice.
And I just got a new office, so you probably hear echo because we haven't finished decorating and getting everything in here for sound dampening and stuff. So there is a little echo right now, but we're trying to resolve that as soon as possible.
It sounds pretty good. It sounds pretty good. Yeah, I think it's easy to get 90% of the way. The last 10% is really tough, I think.
With
decently priced equipment. You know, one of the places that we see people fail a lot is using the Blue Yeti mic. I don't know if you had any experience with it, but it is just it's a great mic for music, and in really good rooms, it's fantastic. But for podcasters, I think it probably comes up a little short. But just as an aside.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think it's a condenser mic, right?
Yeah, right. It's not dynamic. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's where the problem comes from.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you had advice for somebody who was just getting into podcasting, you know, has been in the content realm for a while, whether it's in fitness or finance or business or self-improvement, what kind of tips have you learned 120-something shows in that might help people shortcut that learning curve a little?
So the first thing I would recommend is, if you're doing an interview style show, then I would bullet point out questions for people. In the very beginning, I tried to script as much as I possibly could for questions. So I would write, you know, a question would be, a whole paragraph would be scripted out. And then I would read that whole paragraph as a question. And because I had never done interviews before, I got stuck kind of just going from question to question and not really being able to just free flow it. And if you just have bullet points of topics that you want to hit on, and you can formulate the question based on those as you go, and then just be willing to really listen and hone in on what the person's answer is, and you're going to find, just if you're naturally curious, other questions regarding what they just said. And that's how you can make the conversation really flow and not have it seem very structured and scripted. So that would be for interviews, that would be my number one tip, is to kind of be okay with it being awkward in the beginning, because that's probably going to happen a little bit. But if you just try to script stuff out and like stick to that hardcore and you do that forever, you're never going to have a really good interview show. So that would be my tip there. If you're not doing interviews, you're just doing solo shows, then you can definitely script out more of it, especially if you know how to read a script without sounding like you're reading. So some people can do that, some people can't do that, or maybe they just need to practice, I don't know. But you can use more of a script. But if you're doing solo shows, I would also say, don't just talk, you know, add in extra audio clips of things. So if people go to my latest podcast episode, which is called Why You Never Binge on Broccoli. It's over an hour long. It's a completely solo show. There's no interview, but you're going to notice that it's a mix of me and other audio clips mixed in. So it's a little bit more produced. And I think that keeps people's attention. And I would also say to use the podcasting platform to its maximum effect. And what I mean by that is, don't be afraid to produce long content. So people are thinking, oh, maybe, you know, people will only listen for 20 minutes or 30 minutes when they're in their car and it's rush hour traffic, and they're not really going to listen to anything longer than that. My bread and butter has been shows longer than an hour. We've gone 2 hours sometimes, and people absolutely do listen. Some of those episodes are the top downloaded episodes for our show, and it's the medium. Like the reason podcasting is so valuable is because you can go so deep on topics and people will stay tuned in. And they know that if they don't have time, they can listen for 20 minutes and pause it, and they'll come back to it later and they'll listen to it in chunks. But they value depth over just trying to be able to fit something in into a certain time slot. So definitely, if you have the knowledge for it and you have the production capabilities and the patience to do the work, make your shows as long as they need to be to cover as much information as possible?
One of my favorite shows is called Hardcore History. I don't know if you've heard it, Dan Carlin.
Yep.
And as you know, he puts out 3 or 4 shows a year, maybe.
Yep.
And I will stop everything I'm doing and listen to that damn show. And they're 4 hours. I mean, the last one was 3 or 3.5 hours or something on a super interesting but sort of obscure topic a lot of times, right? I mean, like 8 different episodes on Genghis Khan, right? And that's like, who can do that? But I think you're spot on, man. I mean, he does such a good job of all solo shows. They must take him forever to do because it's 3 and 4 months in between episodes. And I think they're super valuable. I don't know anyone who's listened to his show who doesn't love it. But they take so long because I think solo content is really challenging, and you're very smart to break it up and use pre-recorded bits of other interviews or videos you've done or whatever to intersperse it. But let me think. I have 3 podcasts between this one and other 2 that I do. I've probably done 150 episodes. I can't talk for 10 minutes by myself, I don't think, without sort of break or something. It's really hard. And I see a lot of podcasters try to start a solo show with a 20-minute epilogue and don't even get past the start line because of that.
Yeah. And you have to be very organized, and you have to know exactly what topic points you want to hit on so that you stay on topic. Because what you can't do, like if Dan Carlin came on to talk about Genghis Khan and he just started rambling, nobody would listen to his show.
Right.
His show's very focused. It stays on course. It's a story that you follow, and it's perfectly produced. And that's why he's successful. And if you look at it, he's taking full advantage of the medium of podcasting, because Hardcore History could not exist anywhere else. Is Dan Carlin going to write blog posts with that amount of detail that people actually read? Probably not. Is he going to create videos on YouTube that people are going to watch that are 4 hours long? Probably not. So he's using the medium of podcasting because it is the medium that makes that type of communication successful. And I think if people really want to get the most out of it and provide the most value to their audience, they should look into using that medium to greater capabilities and not just creating 20-minute shows. I mean, I have another podcast that I do called Revolutionary Parent Radio, and a lot of it's Q&A. So people will call in with a question, I'll answer it. You know, we'll do a 20-minute show. Fine. People love that, right? But I also mix in interviews that are an hour long. I do solo shows on that podcast as well that are over an hour long. So mixing up the content is also a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to ask about monetization. I assume all of your stuff sort of points people back to your products and your website. Do you guys, have you dabbled in sponsors and whatnot in your show?
We haven't. No, we haven't. We haven't because, and we haven't done this on the blog either, in the site. I created programs because the programs are what can help people best. And I feel like if I'm advertising other people's products, it's a distraction. Mm-hmm. I want to get people to where I can help them best. So everything that we do is just focused on our core programs. There's no advertising on the website. There's no advertising on the podcast. It's all geared towards, here's the free information. And if you want to go deeper, then come work with us. Those are your only 2 options. So, and that's worked out well so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard the analogy, you can't be half pregnant, right? You can't be pushing other people's products and getting affiliate commission from this and that. And oh, by the way, ours is the best thing since sliced bread.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. Well, so Kevin, where can folks go to find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah. So everything is at rebootedbody.com. Just spell it like it sounds and it'll come up, or you can Google Rebooted Body and you're going to find our Facebook there. You're going to find, we do have a Facebook group community that we just launched. So not a Facebook brand page, but a group. We're experimenting with that and it's working out really well. So definitely check that out if you're interested. And you're going to be able to get on our email list if you want to do that, or you can just send me an email through our contact page. Basically, everybody who uses that email form, I guarantee a response back. So whatever you want to ask me, let's start a conversation.
Awesome. Awesome. Kevin, thanks so much for hopping on today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. To find out more and check out all of the previous episodes, head on over to podcastmotor.com/show. I'd love to hear from you. If you can leave a rating and review in iTunes, please let me know what you think of the show. The ratings and reviews help us get more exposure to the show and bring on more awesome guests. All right, we'll see you next time.